This reading in John, you know the setting. Jesus had just come back from his temptation in the wilderness. He'd just come back. And John sees him coming back and he says, "Look, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world." And he said, "I didn't know that that's who it was, but he who sent me to baptize," which would be God, said, "One day you're going to baptize a person and the Spirit of God is going to come down upon him, and that's the one. I want you to introduce him to Israel." And so he said, "I saw. And he's the one, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world." You know what happened when John said that? What happened when John said that? It's part of the reading. And two disciples who heard him speak, and they followed Jesus, they left their master. So they were disciples of John and started following Jesus. Something kind of interesting about that very thing. There was something, can I say it this way? There was something they were looking for. Now we read through this, and I don't know that we even come close to catching their sense of excitement. Look at verse 45. Philip found Nathanael. Now, Jesus said later of Nathanael, an Israelite indeed in whom there is no deception, no guile. What you see is what you get. Because man of great integrity. So Philip found him and said to him, "We have found him of whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote." Can you imagine that he just kind of deadpan said that? It's like, what did the miner say when he found a vein of gold in the mine? "Oh, I found a vein of gold in the mine." Is that what he said? Everybody in the camp knew what he found. Everybody. What does Eureka mean? That's a Greek for "I found it." I found it. I found him. The guy that Moses wrote about and all the prophets, and he's right here now. 1,500 years they'd been waiting for that guy. And here he is. We found him. Woo-hoo! Join me. And did you see how many times Jesus said, for example, "What are you looking for?" They said, "Where are you staying?" And Jesus said, "Come. Come, and I'll show you." So they spent the day with him. And then Simon went out and said, "First of all, gotta find my brother." What was his brother's name? Simon found a brother. Peter, Andrew, James, and John. James and John were brothers, Peter and Andrew. Peter is Simon. Simon Peter. He went out and found his brother. This is so good, I gotta bring my brother into it. And we've found the Christ, verse 41. And then down in verse 43, the next day, I mean, they spent the day with Jesus from the 10th hour on, spent the day. I wonder what they heard. Man, if I only had my MP3 player there, I could have recorded what they heard. Just it would have been great stuff. Holy Spirit didn't see fit for us to have that conversation, only that they had a conversation. Anyway, the next day, he purposed to go forth into Galilee, and he found Philip. And Jesus said to him, "Follow me. Follow me. Come along. I'm going on into Galilee. Come with me." Philip found Nathanael and said, "We found him." And Nathanael said, "Yeah, but can any good thing come out of Hilltop? You know, or out of Nazareth?" That's kind of the same idea. Any good thing come out of Hilltop? What was that place in Spokane? I forget. Right. No, it was a district. Yeah. Can any good thing come out? And what was the common sense answer? Can any good thing come out of Nazareth? Come and see. You see a theme going on in here? This invitation to come see what Jesus has. Come see who Jesus is. Come see. What was that song that I don't remember who did it? "Come See About Me" was a song we used to listen to. Come see. I think that's who it was, Diana Ross. In Matthew 11, this is a very famous, I mean, we've used this many times, but I just want you to see some things. And when I get all done, I'm going to come back and show you something that we can make out of all of this. In Matthew 11, Jesus said, 27, all things have been handed over to me by my Father. Now, that reminds us of Matthew 28 and 18, all authority has been given me in heaven and earth, go make disciples. But here he says, all things have been handed over to me by my Father, and no one knows the Son except the Father, nor does anyone know the Father except the Son, and anyone to whom the Son wills to reveal him. Come to me. Now, look what he said there in verse 27. You guys don't know. You really don't know who the Father is unless I show you who the Father is. And then he says in verse 28, come to me. What's the natural conclusion that you make from that? You can't know the Father unless I tell you. Come here. What's the natural thought that comes to your mind right there? I want to tell you who he is. Come to me. I want to tell you about your Father. I want you to know him. I want you to know him intimately, like I do. And so he says, and I will come to me, all who are heavy, weary, and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. So you start thinking about this invitation, come to me. And you might say, well, what's in it for me? You're getting a band of disciples, and these band of disciples, they're going to be doing things for you. They're going to be shelling into their, reaching into their pocket and shelling out money. They're going to be doing things for you. What do I get out of it? So I'll give you rest. You're weary. You're burdened with life. Maybe you're wandering in the dark. And Jesus in John 8, so I'm the light of the world. I can show you how to walk. Come to me. If you're weary, if you're heavy, if you're burdened. In John chapter 4 at verse 10, we have this little piece from Jesus. I was really afraid, Scott, that you were going to steal my thunder in so many different ways. You were just plowing the field for me to plant the seed in, that's all. Yeah. In John 4 at verse 10, Jesus, this is the woman at the well. The woman at the well, Jesus asked her for a drink of water. And she says, you, a Jew, asking me, a Samaritan woman, for a drink? Jesus said, if you knew who I was and what the gift of God was, you'd ask me, and I would give you that living water. If you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. A thing that I really appreciate about this, Mark, is that Jesus didn't say, make a bargain with me. Come, let's make a bargain. And here's your checklist of things you need to do for me. And then I'll give you living water. Jesus didn't do that. Just ask me. Come to me. And that, what is living water? What is living water? It goes on to say in this story, doesn't it, that she says, give me that water so I don't have to come to this well all the time and draw on drink. He said, everyone who drinks of the water from this well is going to get thirsty again. But you drink from the water I give you, you'll never thirst. What's living water? Isn't it that concept where the thirst within us is quenched? Mm-hmm. I'm just doing some work in Ecclesiastes the other day. In Ecclesiastes 3 at verse 11, it says, he, God, has placed eternity in man's heart in such a way that man can't figure out how to quench it. That's a rough paraphrase, but that's the essence of the idea. You can't figure out how to quench that internal thirst that you've got. Come to me. I'll give you water that'll do that. Come to me if you're weary. I'll take your burden away. Come to me if you're in the dark, and I'll give you light. Come to me if you have an inner thirst. I'll quench it for you. Come to me. In John 4, here in verse 29, the woman came running back to town. I mean, Jesus had this conversation, and he said, go get your husband. Remember what she said? I don't have a husband. You know, she was shacking up. I don't have a husband. Jesus said, you're right. You've had five husbands. The man you're living with now is not your husband. You told the truth. How did you know that? And so she comes running back and says, come see a man who has told me everything I've done. Is that the Christ? And the people heard that, and they were so impressed with, they wanted to go see this guy. And so they came out to him, and Jesus said, look, the field is white for harvest. Talking about the white robes of the people coming toward him. The field is white for harvest. Why were they coming to him? Well, there was a desire for more than what this life can offer. You call it thirst, you call it darkness, you call it weariness. In Jesus, they saw somebody who could fill the needs of their heart, somebody who could make sense out of life for them. And so they came flocking to him. In chapter 8, we have the story. And I look in verse 34 and 35. Jesus is interacting with some stubborn Jews. 31, Jesus was therefore saying to those Jews who had believed in him, if you abide in my word, then you're truly my disciples. And you'll know the truth. And the truth will make you free. They answered, we're Abraham's offspring. We've never yet been enslaved in him. You understand the depth of the lie in that? I mean, there's the Babylonians, the Egyptians, and the Babylonians, and the Assyrians, then the Babylonians, then the Medo-Persians, and now the Romans. We've never been enslaved to anybody. Big bunch of liars. But Jesus said, truly, truly, I say to you, verse 34, everyone who commits sin is enslaved by it. And the slave does not remain in the house forever. The son does remain. For if therefore the son shall make you free, you shall be free indeed. Perhaps the greatest need that we have in coming to Jesus is we don't know how to deal with, we don't know how to resolve the mistakes we've made. We don't know how to resolve the arrogance and the ignorance or the pride, that's arrogance. We don't know how to resolve the consequences of acting out. We don't know how to deal. We can push it aside and say, well, that was me back then, but it's still there haunting us, right? It's still there saying, yeah, you did that. And you've got this burden of guilt and you're packing it around. It's like a ton of every time that you mess up, it's like adding another rock to your backpack. And you come unto me, you who are weary and heavy laden. Here, it says, come to me. I can set you free from the burden of sin. So there's a lot of reasons that just practical reasons that we have. It's just, I'm thirsty. I yearn for more. I feel the weight of my guilt. And I can't get out from underneath it. I'm walking and it seems like I keep making the same mistakes because I'm walking in the dark. I need Jesus. Now we've heard Jim talk about the struggle, but it was in Alabama, back there where you're laying on your back looking up at the stars and you finally called on God and finally got sober. We've heard that story, and it's, you know, just the power of God. Mine is not quite so spectacular, but for me, it was very dramatic. I had a high school girlfriend. I really was into her. Her name was Mary, not this Mary, a different Mary. And her brother was in the Navy in Maryland. She's going to go spend the summer with him. I just turned my world upside down. I finally got a letter from her, and she talked about this settler she met named Roger. Wow, that really helped. And I felt like I was falling and nowhere to land. I just wanted to fall back and have somebody catch me. I called the preacher the next day and we made arrangements for me to get right with God. But I knew I needed somebody to take that away, somebody to catch me when I fall. So I came to him. But we studied something in Matthew 14 last week that kind of deflected the course of this message. It added to what I wanted to say. And I think you'll see the value and the benefit of it. In Matthew 14, down here by verse 18, it's the feeding of the 5,000. They're out, huge mass of people. John tells us there were 5,000 men, not counting women and children. And they're hungry. They've been with Jesus all day. Same story as in John 6, by the way. They've been with Jesus all day. And finally, the disciples come and said, the people have been here all day. Send them away so they can get something to eat. And Jesus said, well, you feed them. You feed them. Oh, okay. You feed them, Mark. 5,000 men plus their wives and children. Feed them. With what? I mean, they don't have Uber Eats. You can't get on your thing and call. And I'm here out there. There's no stores. There's not even any villages where you are. Feed them. Big job. You ever feel like you've had a big job that you need to do and you don't know that you have the resources? You don't know that you have the mental capacity or the planning capacity. It feels like it's well over your head. They said, well, there is a boy here. He's got five loaves. You know what a loaf is? No, it's a piece of pita bread, that little pita pocket. About what they would have as a loaf. I got five of those and two fishes. Oh, what does he say here verse 18? Bring them here to me. Jim, that just triggered my thought. We got problems. We got opportunities. I mean, think about it. Failures. And what am I going to do with this failure? We have perhaps a heartache. Ever have a heartache? Ever see a child, your child, making choices that you know, taking them down a road where there's no good thing that's going to come out of that? You ever have that? Ever see a dear friend go off the deep end? Back in Indiana, it wasn't my friend, it was my friend's friend. The man had been a Christian for years, was a deacon in the church, and just one day he started drinking beer and hanging out with women other than his wife. He just flipped out. You know, things go on in our life. Jesus said simply, bring it to me. Bring it to me. Peter, John, this is bigger than you can think that you can handle the way you are right now. Bring it to me. I'll show you how to do that. So he took the five loaves and the two fishes and thanked God for them and started breaking off pieces, fed the 5,000, took up 12 baskets of extras. What can't Jesus do when you bring it to him? Say, you got stuff, he doesn't want you to struggle with it, but he's not going to impose himself upon you. He's not going to just come in, oh, this is more than Michael can handle, I'll do it. Now, he did promise, I won't let you be tempted beyond what you are able to bear, and I will make the way of escape, but a way of escape has to be used. I mean, there's a way of escape. Oh, that's nice, the way of escape over there. Really interesting way of escape you made for me, God. Well, use it, stupid. I shouldn't have said stupid. Use it. I'm trying to rescue you. Use it. Okay? Bring it to me. Look at this in Mark 9, Mark chapter 9. Don't you love the Gospels? You get to see Jesus in action. You get to see him in action through Matthew's vantage point because he's got a point to make about Jesus. And you get to see him in action through Mark's vantage point. It's interesting somehow how they'll be referring to the same incident but drawing a different focal point from it. Here in Mark 9 at verse 19, it's the story of the Jesus has just, first part of Mark 9, he's up on the Mount of Transfiguration, and Peter and James and John get to see this spectacular Moses and Elijah, and then Moses and Elijah disappear, and God says, "This is my son. Listen to him." And so they're coming down to this glorious view, and the other disciples having an argument with the populace that was there. And one of them comes up with an accusation. "We took my son to your disciples and told them to cast out the demon, and they couldn't do it." And I wonder just how much that crushed Jesus to come from this glorious view on the mountaintop to this valley of despair. But look what he did. Let's start reading in verse 17, Mark 9, 17. "And one of the crowd answered him, 'Teacher, I brought my son possessed with a demon which makes him mute, and whenever it seizes him, it dashes him, and he foams and gnashes, grinds his teeth and stiffens out.'" It sounds like epilepsy, doesn't it? "And I told your disciples to cast it out, and they couldn't. And Jesus answered them and said, 'O unbelieving generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I bear you? Bring him to me. Bring him to me. Bring him to me." Bring it to Jesus. However difficult it is for you, Jesus said, "Bring him to me." I was talking with Jim the other day at the food bank about how so many of the I don't want to disparage anybody, but there is a class of preacher out there that is in it for the popularity and the money. And it's like they feel the need to be the charisma in the room. They feel the need to bear it and bring it on their own power. And Jesus said, "Bring it to me. Let me be the power for your problem." You have an opportunity to work with somebody. Don't bear that on your own. Bring it to Jesus. Prayer, a lot of prayer when you have an opportunity. You have a heartbreaking, heart-crushing heartache or despair. Don't try to handle it yourself. Bring it to me, Jesus said. Bring it to me. You have some glorious opportunity. Bring it to me. I can take your five loaves and two fishes, and I can feed a multitude. I was sharing with Jim that same conversation. This young preacher boy heard that one of the noted preachers was nearby, and so he sent him a letter and said, I think his name was Franklin. "Brother Franklin, would you send me some of your best sermons? I want to learn how to preach." Brother Franklin took a manila envelope, put one of those little New Testaments in it, and a short note says, "Here, son, there's enough soap in this to clean up the world," and send it back. Okay. Don't depend upon you. Depend upon gracias, Señor. Depend upon your Savior. And then Matthew 4. And so bring it to Jesus. But look at this thought here in Matthew 4. This is where Jesus began his ministry. He'd already met and John 1 had already taken place, so the finding of Philip and Nathaniel and Peter and Andrew and James and John, he'd already found these guys. And so in Matthew 4, then he began his work. And so these guys are there. Okay, now what? They're out fishing with their dad. He's already met them. He's already said, come follow me. I mean, he already said, come to me, come to me, I'll teach you. But he hadn't started his ministry yet. And in verse 18, Matthew 4, and walking by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea. And he said to them, follow me. I'll make you fishers of men. So they had come to him to spend a day. And now they're back out fishing. And I don't know how much time has passed, okay? But now Jesus getting ready. Chapter 5 of Matthew, Sermon on the Mount. He's getting ready to go out and preach his, present his ministry and call people to him, you know, like we've been seeing. But he says to these guys, follow me. And I'll make you fishers of men. You're catching fish. It's kind of like the woman at the well. You drink this water, you're gonna have to come back tomorrow and get more. You're gonna be thirsty again. Catch these fish and they're gonna be consumed. But you go out and you fish for men. And what happens when you fish for men? You're not gonna barbecue them. You're gonna send them to eternal life. They're never gonna fade. See? You can fish for fish, or you can fish for men. You can fish for something, you're going to have to refill your creel every day, but you can fish for men and watch them go to heaven with you. Which would you rather do? Come, follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men. Jesus used a different illustration in John 10. I am the good shepherd. Remember the John 10 good shepherd story? I'm going to start reading in verse 1. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter by the door into the fold of the sheep, but climbs up some other way. Another, you're going to force yourself into the leadership of the sheep. He is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep. The doorkeeper lets him in because he recognizes, I don't have to crawl over the fence. I can just go in through the gate because I'm a recognized shepherd. To him, the doorkeeper opens. And watch this. And the sheep hear his voice. Now, this is interesting. In a sheepfold would be the sheep of all the shepherd in the area. They would come at night and go into the fold. All the shepherds would have their sheep in that fold. Well, how do you tell whose sheep is what? You don't worry about you identifying the sheep. The sheep identify you. They hear the voice of their shepherd, and they'll come to him. A sheep will hear the voice of not his shepherd, and he'll go away from him. My sheep hear my voice, and they follow me. Here, I want to go where Jesus, footprints of Jesus that make the pathway go. I will do what? I will follow the steps of Jesus. How far? Wherever they go. No, only if they go to pleasant places, like go to church on Sunday morning. That's rather innocuous, non-challenging, non-threatening. But what if they're into the realm of the homeless? Oh, that's homeless. Yeah, I don't. Well, I watch it and I see Jesus. Where is he? He's there with the homeless. He's there with the lepers. He's there with the disenfranchised and the outcast. I'll follow Jesus wherever he is. You're going to go there? I'll follow Jesus all the way to heaven. But sometimes it goes to places that, I don't know. So I'm going to ask you a real question. Are you following Jesus? I will follow the steps of Jesus wherever they go. I heard you say that. I heard you make that promise. I heard you make that commitment this morning. I heard that. And you did too. You heard everybody else here say the same thing. I will follow the steps of Jesus wherever they go. In John 13, just
two more things I want to look at here with you. John 13, this is the comments about the reenactment, actually, is what this is. Jesus got up, it's the Last Supper. It's the last Passover Jesus took. And he got up, and because nobody else had done it, and why hadn't anybody else done it? Because I might be the number one guy, and how humiliating it would be for me to wash your feet. You don't need it unless they're dirty, is what Jesus said. So this kind of foot washing celebration that goes on in some places is totally out of whack with this one. You don't need your foot washed unless it's dirty, right? It's not just a symbolic thing. And so here's Jesus, got up, took off his dining clothes and put on an apron and a bowl of water and a towel and started washing their feet. We'll read 13 going forward. Verse 12. And so when he had washed their feet and taken his garments, but put his dining dinner jacket back on, and reclined again, he said to them, "Do you know what I have done to you?" Is that a dull question or what, Michael? Do you know what I've done to you? Yeah, you washed their feet. Wrong answer. That wasn't what he had done to them. What he had done to them, he says, "You call me teacher and Lord, and you're right, for that's who I am. If I then, the Lord and teacher, washed your feet, you ought also to wash one another's feet." You should have done that. You shouldn't have made it fall upon me. That you should have. And by the way, I love Chris. And one of the things that I really, really admire and respect about Chris is that there's a job that needs to be done, she wants to do it. Michael, same way. All of us have that in us, but man, sometimes it just that's the thing you really, really see. Okay. And so you ought to have, I shouldn't have had to done it, because it should have already been done, because that's who you are. Okay. You should have done it. But he says, "I gave you an example." Now watch verse 15 very carefully. "I gave you an example that you should also do what I did to you." Is that what it says? Not close. This is not, you should everybody wash each other's feet. If they need it, you should do it. But he says that you should do as I did to you. Not what, but as. It's not just, oh, it's a foot washing ceremony. It's, what do you need? What do you need? What do you need? What do you need? I want to say something, and I want to say it very powerfully, if I can, because this is way out of my comfort zone to say things very powerfully. But there are people who need us. People from this congregation who need us. But we get so busy that need is. And Jesus, I gave you an example. I've showed you what I want my disciples to be like. If there's a need among you, address it. If there's a need, the more important thing is to address the need, not to go about your daily business. There's a need, get on it. Now, you know that's the case if, say, it's the maintenance of your car. You don't just ignore it, hoping it'll go away. What happens when you ignore a problem with your vehicle? It gets worse. What happens when we ignore a problem or a need among us? It's like an ulcer that just grows until somebody, and sadly, I stand before you, someone who didn't follow my advice. And I've seen people get so worn by the burdens of their life that they just give up. And I said, why did they give up? What we have in Jesus is so great. It's because they were struggling with something that they needed somebody to help them realize, call upon Jesus, take it to Jesus. And I didn't do that for them. Now they're struggling. Maybe they'll come back. Maybe they won't. Maybe they're gone forever. But Jesus said, I gave you an example to do like I did. I will follow the steps of Jesus wherever they go. I did that. Jesus said, come follow me. I'm going to close with, maybe I should have closed with that, but I got to pick up this thought from Paul. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 1. Paul says, be imitators. Mimetos is the Greek word. We get mimic out of that. Imitate also comes from that. Be imitators of me, just as I also am of Christ. Do you realize that being a follower of Jesus makes you an imitator of Jesus when you do it right? Okay. A lot of things that Jesus went through. There was a time when his disciples came up to him and said, we'd like to have the prominent places. And Jesus said, I have a baptism to go through. Can you go through that baptism? He wasn't talking about getting plunged in the water because he'd already done that. He was talking about the difficulty of going to the cross. Can you? He says, yeah, we can do that. He says, you will be baptized with my baptism. You will. It wasn't you might be. He says, you will be. Now, what they went through is different than what I'm going to go through or you're going to go through. But the point is not what was the thing they went through. The point is they went through it. They didn't bail when it got tough. Following Jesus may sometimes get tough. It may challenge your choices. I'd rather do this. But what would Jesus want me to do? What would Jesus do? Where would Jesus, if Jesus were me, what choice would he make? I will follow the steps of Jesus. But what choice would he make? Now I want you to take a look as we sum this all up. Come to me is an invitation that Jesus made. Come to me. I want to nourish you. I want to enlighten you. I want to relieve you of your burden. I want to bless you. Come to me. And then he said, now that you've learned who I am, bring it to me. This is more than bring yourself to me. That's come to me. This is bring your problems to me. Bring your difficulties to me. Bring your challenges to me. Bring your opportunities to me. Bring it to me. I can take five and make it 5,000. Hey, bring it to me. And then he said, now follow me. So I come to him. I bring him my stuff. And then I start following, going wherever he went. You see the progress there? From me coming to Jesus to find in him rest. Then me bringing my stuff to Jesus to find in him and guidance. And then me following him. So, where are you? Have you come to him? He'll take your burdens all away. Are you bringing your needs, opportunities, cares, heartbreaks? Are you bringing those to him? Are you following him, going where he went, doing what he did, making his priorities yours? Wherever you are, there is answers for you in Jesus Christ.